Viewers, listeners, welcome to another episode of Blighty Talks Bricks. My guest today is someone I don't know very well. We were kindly introduced to each other by some amazing friends. So I think really off the back of that, my guest will be par for the course in what we've had on this show in terms of just top human beings. I'm really looking forward to the chat we're going to have. His intro could actually take up all of the podcast if I'm not careful. He's a TV presenter, a comedian, a singer, a radio presenter, a DJ, and an actor. So you can imagine there's lots of things we can talk about. I think for lots of you out there, you would best know him as someone as a host of Live and Kicking and The Gadget Show. I know him as Otis Dealey. Otis, welcome to Blighty Talks Bricks. How are you, fella?
I'm good, Blighty. Thank you for having me on. I'm nice.
Good. Well, it's lovely to see you. You're looking really sharp.
Thank you very much.
The way you've put your clothes together. I'm going to try and copy that. I don't think I'm going to pull it off, but you're looking good.
I think anyone can pull it off. It's just confidence,
yeah,
really.
I've tried that, and my wife said that doesn't work.
Don't listen to her.
Yeah, I try not to do that either, but I get in trouble there. When I was just doing a little bit of research, because as I said, we don't really know each other well. We've got some great people in common. Spoonie being one of them.
Yeah.
Andy Lee being another.
Yeah.
You and I have a couple of things in common, and that is that we're both London boys. You're what I call south of the river.
Yep.
And I'm north of the river.
I've got no problem with being south of the river.
Well, I always thought that if I bought property, because I'd like to look at the north, if I bought property, I'd buy in the south. But no, so we're both Londoners. We've also got both an interest in whiskey.
Yeah.
But you're a connoisseur of whiskey.
Come on, don't
you know,
do me
come
that.
On, come on. I like drinking it.
Well, that's the difference. You like drinking it. Like, I love the stuff. I'll sit here and say it's a strange one, but the journey kind of makes sense. I started drinking at uni. I didn't touch a drop before I hadn't touched a drop long before I was 20.
Right. Same as me, I was 21.
Field. Yeah, track and field, cycling, keeping fit. My idol was Daley Thompson growing up, so alcohol held no desire for me at all. I started drinking at uni just to fit in a little bit. And everybody was drinking pints. And I just found pints really filling.
Yep.
There was a chap there a few years older than me called Shokoya. He went by the name Shock. And he was a cool dude. And he took me under his wing. Taught me a little bit of confidence, how to relax when talking to women, girls at that stage.
See, booze does that.
Yeah, well, he introduced me to Jack Daniels and Coke.
Did he?
And that's where I started sort of messing about with bourbon, whiskey, if you will. And a few years after that, I was dating a woman whose PR job was responsible for looking after a bunch of whiskey brands. And she was like, you don't want to drink that. The same team is responsible for this, that, that, and that. So I started drinking a bit more. Another friend introduced me to Laphroaig, and that's where I fell in love with Scotch whiskey. And then the last 8-9 years, I've been exploring it wherever I can get my hands on it, lips on it, and from all over the world as well.
Well, it's when I say we've got an interest, we have, and I certainly like my whiskey. On the show, I always like to try and find something that I've got in common with my guests.
Yes.
And I think I've got something here for you. So, Coral, if I could just ask you, there is a story to this. I have this whiskey.
Yeah.
I actually play in a golf tournament up at what they call the Highland Links. So this is actually my prize, believe it or not. I play in this pro-am. To Martin are the sponsors of the tournament. It's a 3-day golf tournament that's played up in the Scottish Islands. We play Nairn, where I enjoy it so much, I've now joined.
Okay.
And we also play Castle Stewart. Yeah. And so that's a little gift from me to you.
Oh, thank you.
And I just want you to take that home, and as and when you wish. I'm told when you have nice whiskey and nice wine, make sure when you drink it that you're not pissed and you do it with people you love.
Yeah.
So that's just a little token from me.
I fully appreciate that. Thank you very much.
And it's lovely. So
I will enjoy that. Cheers.
My pleasure.
Or should I say slán de mhaoir?
I want to talk about how you got into the acting and creative journey that you're on.
Yeah.
Is the story true that you were spotted by a talent agency when you was on Blind Date?
Yeah, it is. It is. First of all, you know, as varied as my career looks, like I like to think I'm a funny guy, and I think describing me as a funny guy is more fitting than a comedian. I did stand up once,
right?
And I did that at the Comedy Store. This was a challenge set for me during my time on Live and Kicking, and I got up in front of a room full of adults, and the plan was to do a comedy set, or the challenge was to do a comedy set for 5 minutes that the kids could watch on a Saturday morning.
Okay.
I didn't want to stand up there on that stage, on that hallowed turf.
It's difficult, isn't it?
And do a kid-friendly routine. I wanted to do a routine that was true to me. I was offered the writers of the show, and I said, it's important that I do it off my own back, so that if it's successful, I did that. Yep. If I fail, then I fail on my own terms. So I wrote a 7-minute stand-up routine that went down well enough to be invited back. But the run-up to doing something like that, the nerves involved were just immense.
It's not easy, is it?
And it's one of the disciplines I have the utmost respect for, to put yourselves through that. I mean, not everybody will feel nerves in the way that I did, but to put yourself through that in terms of creativity on a regular basis, I take my hat off to them. But yeah, and I radio DJ'd, but between you and I didn't fully enjoy the experience.
Did you not?
I like to make eye contact. I use my hands a lot. And I think in terms of my communication, I'm quite a physical guy. And I found it quite challenging.
Did you?
The other disciplines that I've taken part in, we'll no doubt talk about, and I'll, you know, you'll notice a difference in terms of how I talk about
how you
about
fall
them.
Into certain, your conversation, your body language.
That's it. Anyway, back to the beginning. I appeared on Blind Date as a result of posters going up all over the university that I was at. I was studying at Sunderland Uni, and I was studying pharmacy.
Okay.
Whole bunch of posters went up, and a bunch of us, I think about six of us, said, you know, fuck it, let's give it a go. Best thing that could happen is we get a holiday paid for.
Yep.
Worst thing that can happen was we had a trip into town and we got to hang out with some TV people. So I had fun at the interview and got invited onto the show. I met Scylla. I was picking. So I had three questions.
Oh, so you was picking?
I was picking, yeah.
Yeah.
I had three questions that they gleaned from 12. They originally asked me to write out 12 questions. They picked what they felt were the best three.
Can you remember the questions?
I can. I was nervous as hell, by the way. So friends and relatives that saw it were like, that's not you. Really, really nervous. Fiddling with my hat.
Give me one of the three grinning. Questions, because it's a show it's a show I loved. I loved it.
I'll give you one of the three. I'm studying pharmacy, and the kind of things that I look into are new medications. The wording at the time was drugs, but they didn't like the term drugs. So new medications, new drugs that will help make people better. If you could invent or create a wonder drug, what would it do?
And the person you chose, because when the screen goes back, did it match what you expected?
I actually said I'm going to pick ice cream number three, and the girl number two had actually given me an answer about ice cream, but there were another two answers. Yeah, and almost screwed it right up. But a number three had done slightly better. So yes, I went with three, but I could have gone with two. It's just how it was interpreted.
And was it a good date?
We had fun on the date, yeah.
Where did you go? You didn't get unlucky and go somewhere like Canvey Island. No, sorry, Canvey Island, but I shouldn't say that.
No, you shouldn't say that. I went to Seattle.
Did you?
Yeah, spent 5 days out in the States. It was brilliant.
And Scylla?
She was lovely. She was really, really nice. I was fortunate enough to meet her twice, because you do the intro.
You do, then you do the
and
one
you
after.
Come back. And then at the end of that series, because that was series 10, they did a special where they celebrated 10 years of the very best of Blind Date, and they invited me back as the standout from season 10. Yeah, because when I came back on the trip and when I came back, you got to see more of the real me, the Joker, the funny the motor man. Mouth, yeah, yeah, the singer.
Well, I have my own story with Scylla, so I genuinely loved Blind Date.
I used to
come back from the golf course, and I used to have Blind Date. I had a little TV up in my bedroom, and I used to have that on while I was getting myself ready to go out for the evening. And later in life, I was very fortunate to go to a very private dinner party with Sir Cliff Richard, who is still a friend today.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was myself, my wife, and two friends, and we went to Cliff's house in Barbados. And his guest to join us to dinner was Scylla Black.
Wow.
And we had the most amazing dinner. At that time, he had his own vineyard in Portugal. And so he plied particularly me. I blame
partial
him.
To a
well, we tried his rosé, we tried his red, we tried his champagne. It was fantastic. And Scylla was amazing.
Yeah.
Sir Cliff was just one special guy. And at the end of the evening, and I was a little bit pickled, we gave Scylla a lift back, and she always wore pencil skirts.
Did she? Right.
If you look on Blind Date back, and she always had these little pencil skirts.
Right.
And my pal who drove, he wasn't drinking, he drove, he had a discovery. And so when we left Cliff's house, and with kisses and hugs and goodbye, we gave Scylla a lift back to her apartment. And because of her pencil skirts, she couldn't get into the discovery. So, and I just remember it now, I basically picked her up and I said, Scylla, I never thought I'd be giving Scylla Black a bunk up in the back of a disco. and it was, it's just a story to start.
Wow.
My wife's face at the time was, I just can't believe you just said what you said. But she was such a lovely woman. She was such great company.
Yeah, she exuded warmth. She was a consummate professional. And you know, this show, she made her name off the back of matching nervous teenagers and 20 somethings. And she was really good at coming in, saying a few words and just helping you to,
well, she was an icon as well because of the Beatles, because of Liverpool. Yeah.
She didn't make you nervous. You know, if you've got someone that big coming into the studio, into your company, you might get really, really nervous. And she was really good at just making you chill.
Making you go. So you obviously made a big impact on Blind Date.
Yeah.
You got invited back. Was that the start of your sort of journey on all of these things that I've mentioned you've done? It's a very varied career, isn't
it? Yeah, that was pretty much day one. I when the show went out, I got contacted by LWT Press Office, and they said, we've had a few inquiries from organisations, individuals who are interested in working with you, auditioning you, doing some screen time, screen testing, that kind of thing. And they said, we want to make it clear that nobody has launched a career off the back of Blind Date, and we can't advise you on who best to go to. Just be really careful. And I had just started my final year when all of this started to take shape. So I was aware that I didn't want to drop out.
Yeah.
It was important that I finished my degree and then could perhaps explore what the wider world had to offer. And of all of the offers that came in, audition for La Cage aux Folles, an audition for Blues Brothers, which was going to immediately tour Japan.
Was it?
What was the Friday night show? The Word.
Yep.
I did a screen test for The Word. They all wanted me to sort of leave straight away, and I couldn't do that. I got contacted by a chap who wanted to manage a singing career for me. I stayed in touch with him. And I started doing part-time work for a small cable and satellite channel called TCC, who were like, stay at uni. We will get you down every couple of weekends. You can record a bunch of links and we'll just put them between our shows over the course of the month. And that's who I went with.
And looking back, the right decision?
Absolutely. I couldn't see myself. I wanted to go into pharmaceutical research.
So you're a bright spark as well, aren't you?
When I put my mind to work, I can. But my focus
put my mind to
great.
Loads of things, and it's never sparked.
My focus isn't that great. And pharmacy's like, it's a really serious job.
Yeah.
And I like to fuck about a bit, and I'd have got caught out one way or another with such a responsible job. Excuse me, I definitely made the right decision. No regrets.
It's all of the things that I mentioned you've done. It's precarious, isn't it? It's a tough industry to make a headway in.
I think being on TV, being on screen, being in radio, being in entertainment, that's what I'm looking for. It can be quite fickle. Your face has to fit. And your...
Is it like a boys club? There's a network. You've got to be in with the right crew, the right gang.
Yeah, I know people who network incredibly well, and they are doing fantastically well. I'm not that good at networking, you know, making friends, following up, making connections, making sure they stay sweet, that kind of thing. Putting on a grin when you're on show, in a room, that kind of thing. I gravitate towards people that give me something, whether they're mouthy, or there has to be something. I can't just talk to anyone and everyone, and I think that in some instances has meant that my path might not have sort of blossomed as nicely as it could have done. I'm okay with that. I wouldn't say it's a boys club, but it's definitely, if you know the right people, it can definitely help.
And so if there's any young would-be actors out there, is there any sort of nuggets of information, advice? You know, you've been in the industry a long time. You've looked, you know, you've dealt with pretty much every part of it.
Yeah.
Is there any sort of advice you could give to them to say, do you know what? That's what I would do or not do.
Yeah. I think self-belief is incredibly important. You've got to be your... I think you've got to be your own biggest fan in one way or another.
Yeah.
Be able to talk up what it is you do. Sell what it is you do. And as well as that self-belief, you really have to... you've got to be prepared to put in the work as well. If you want to be successful at it, you've got to put in the work. And networking as well. Network yourself.
And is it when I hear things like, oh, well, you've got to be with the right agent, is that important as well or not necessarily?
I think it can be a mixture of things. So sometimes the right agent finds you once you break through in a particular way. And sometimes an agent has that belief in what you do and so really will really bat for you. They'll go to bat for you and make sure that they find those opportunities for you. But in any given career, someone like myself might go through 3 or 4 different agents for various reasons. Some of the most successful people I know don't have agents at all. They look after it all themselves. So whatever works for you, if you don't gel right with someone who is pitching to be your agent, or you can't see any benefit in having one, don't get one just because everybody else has. If you think you can do it yourself,
crack on,
absolutely.
And you mentioned that the stand-up bit in comedians didn't sit quite well with you. You mentioned being a DJ was because your sort of your body language and your the eye contact.
Yeah.
What is your, of the disciplines you've done, and I mean, from the intro, it's pretty much everything. What's your favourite one? If you could only do one part of that now, what would it be?
It's funny, I've been talking recently with friends about, I say going back, I mean, I was never really in it, but throwing my hat in the ring again regarding acting.
Yeah.
I miss it. And the only reason I really got into it was because presenting work was thin on the ground. And the reason I got out of it was presenting work started to come back.
Yeah.
And the acting I was doing at the time wasn't paying enough for me to keep a roof over my head, etc. But the projects I did, I thoroughly enjoyed them. I really, really enjoyed them. Presenting is my thing. Sharing information, getting people locked in, and giving them something that they can go and talk to others about. That I think is my that's my superpower. I like to make people laugh, but I also really enjoy the challenge of trying to be somebody different as well with the acting. If I had to choose one, it's got to be presenting.
Well, because, you don't have to. You don't have to. Trust me, I'm not going to do that. No.
If I did, it's presenting that's opened up everything to me, and I'm very grateful for that. But I've got a hankering to explore acting a bit more.
So, talking about acting, the film called Derailed.
Yeah.
Somebody called Aniston, Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston, yeah. Small bit part.
And actually, I remember this, Clive Owen. Clive Owen around the time that film came out, probably 2006, 2007.
Yeah, so we shot that in 03, 04.
Was it really? Yeah. But it didn't hit the airways till 2006, 2007.
Correct, yeah, yeah.
His face was, I'll just talk about him briefly. His face, he was in every film. I thought he was very good. I think I'm a big Bond fan. I think there was talk he might be a James Bond at one point.
There was, yeah.
I don't see him at all now.
Yeah.
You know, the new films, I'm not saying I'm particularly looking out for him, but I don't think I've seen him in newish films for a long time.
I mean, I've no idea what he's up to. If you look at how TV is now, with all the different platforms you've got for streaming, he could very well be in a drama somewhere, I don't know, on Hulu or Peacock that we haven't heard about yet.
Yep.
But you're right, at one point Clive Owen was in everything tentpole in terms of cinema. Children of Men, Derailed, as you mentioned, and I got he couldn't do any wrong. I landed a bit part on Derailed as a rookie cop. And I screen tested for this, auditioned for it, American accent included.
Oh, you had to put that on?
Yeah,
did you?
Yeah. I had to put on an American accent. And
where did you do filming?
Elstree.
American actor, yeah, and you're in Elstree.
Yeah, yeah. You'd be surprised how many interior shots for big movies are done.
And I'm assuming that Jennifer probably didn't get to Elstree.
She did. She came over.
She did come over.
They converted, I think it's Bethnal Green Town Hall as well.
They would do. Bethnal Green, look, you see. It's my like homeland.
To look like a hotel lobby.
Did they?
Yeah. Yeah. So I had a scene with opposite Clive in the hotel lobby. And I had a scene with the lead cop in a hotel room that was a set in Elstree Studios. And I met Giancarlo Esposito, who was also in the movie.
I'm glad you said that, not me.
In the hallway, and had a little chat with him. And I remembered him at the time as bugging out from Do the Right Thing.
Yeah.
And of course, since then, he's gone on to do very, very well. So
Giancarlo's not done too badly. Has
she's
she?
Done all right. I didn't get to see her. As I say, I had a scene opposite.
What about when you have a premiere? Do you not have to go to that?
So again, because I wasn't headline or main actor, I got invited out to a screening. So big screening, with a little bit of champagne and whatnot.
No whiskey.
And a mildly funny thing happened in connection with that. So I practiced my American accent as best I could.
That's cool. I like that.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool, you know. And I had two scenes in which I was speaking. One line about a dead body in another room. You should take a look at it. And then the bit opposite Clive Owen, which was nice briefcase. That's all I had to say. About 3 months after filming completed, they said, can we get you into a booth so that you can record some additional dialogue? Because the director wanted to include a sweeping shot, which would have meant once I was out of vision, there was more stuff for me to say.
Yeah.
And I was doing a shoot for, what was the show? Short Change at the time for Children's BBC. So I couldn't make it into the booth.
Okay.
I'd forgotten about it. I took a date to this screening, and my scene came, first scene, which was Dead Body Hotel. And my character spoke, and my date was like, what the fuck is that? And I was like, what the fuck is that? They dubbed me. Because I wasn't made available for the extra... Yeah.
So this guy, I don't know where they picked him up, you know, sounded like this.
Coming out of my, you know, slimline, average built body. And when the scene opposite Clive Owen came, I understood why they did that. As the camera swept away, my character says, okay, let's see what else you've got. Because him and another copper rifling through evidence at the time. And so that extra line came after my bit with Clive Owen. Apparently there's a lot of shit in this briefcase that he has to get out of the hotel, otherwise he's done for. So there's a moment where there's, you know, eye to eye, I look at the label, I look back at Clive, and I say, nice briefcase. But the director wanted extra, and I wasn't available for it. So
they dubbed you?
Yeah, they dubbed me.
Did they reduce your money then?
No, I got my money.
I know. Well, there's an upside there.
Yeah, I guess so.
Talking about upsides, documented on Blighty Talks Bricks, I struggle emotionally. How do you, you know, I talk to sportsmen and ladies about the highs and lows, particularly lots of golfers I speak to. How do you, is it just that you've got this robust demeanour? How do you deal with the highs and lows when you don't get a part?
Yeah.
Is that tough?
Yeah, it's tough. It's mostly a front. I have a fantastic wife. I have great friends. And I have one in particular who I talk to on a regular basis. And for me, that's everything. Having people that you can talk to when you're not feeling 100%. It's yeah. Okay not to feel 100%. You can't go at full throttle every day. And I think a lot of people expect that of folks like me. They expect the Joker and...
Well, I was just going to say that comedian, that funny man, the clown.
And I don't always feel like that. No. And when I'm out with my family as well, I prefer not to be bothered. I think the worst thing, or the most challenging thing that's happened in my career was... I got booked by Channel 4 to host their, or to anchor their athletics coverage, World Athletics Championships,
okay.
Back in 2011. And
that's a big gig.
It's a massive gig. And it was the first time that the production company was doing anything on this scale, first time for me as well. And with regards, will lead into another thing that I think is very important to anyone looking to move into television: preparation. I think that's probably number one.
Yeah.
And I wasn't prepared properly. And the
production that you wasn't prepared properly?
Because you're
comfortable.
Yeah.
You've screen tested. You've got the recommendation. You've got the gig.
Yeah.
Was that just a lack of experience? It's a bit like golfers, footballers making their first tournament, etc.
A lack of experience in that arena of television. Absolutely. 100%. I fluffed on air. I froze on air. I got names wrong. Yeah. And so I lasted 2 nights and then Channel 4 let me go.
Wow.
And Twitter...
exploded.
Yeah, Twitter went nuts. And so did some of the tabloid press. So I had a really bad time.
You had a shit time.
Yeah, had a really shit time. And a couple of months after that, I got dropped by The Gadget Show.
Did you?
Yeah.
And do you believe that was... Because arguably your performance on The Gadget Show was okay, but there was a little bit of a stigma that came with this now?
I mean, at the time, Channel 5 wanted the show revamped. And they said they didn't want as many presenters on the show. There were 5 of us at the time. And I think it was a close-run thing between me and the girl that ended up staying to host the new format with one of the other presenters. I don't know whether it was what had happened a few months previous that told them, let's steer clear. And I lost a lot of nights thinking about it too much.
I bet.
And feeling exceedingly bitter. I think I was bitter for about a year.
Understandably
yeah,
so.
Yeah. I nearly went bankrupt. Got bailed out by my father-in-law, actually.
Did you really?
Yeah, yeah. And looked at after about 18 months of no meetings, like I couldn't shoot my way into a room to talk to any TV execs.
There was
all.
Just sort of yeah, that's yeah, not yeah, happening.
Steer clear. So I looked at reinventing myself and studied personal training. And my wife and I were about to launch a personal training service/website when a big electronics brand took a punt on me hosting one of their events out in Germany, Berlin. And I looked at the payment slip and looked at projections if I were going to do it as a personal trainer. And I said, there's got to be a more Otis way of getting through this. And we started looking at corporate hosting, guest speaking, that kind of thing. And then a couple of months after that, Gadget Show got on the blower and said, would you consider coming back? And it wasn't an immediate decision. Right. I spoke to a couple of very, very good friends in the business. I spoke to my wife. I wasn't bitter anymore, but I was concerned about what my energy would be like when I sat with people who hadn't called me once during that time, right. during that difficult time. So I sat with it for about a week before deciding to go back.
I think it's really special that you can talk about it. I think you've probably learned more about yourself. It's probably made you a stronger, more rounded individual. You just come across to me as pretty cool. You come across as though you're on it, and you are funny.
Thank you.
I've had dinner with you. I know you're funny. I'm pleased. I'm pleased that you can talk about it like that.
Yeah, I think it's...
And it's very honest. It's very difficult. And I'm sure it's not easy to do either.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's a lot easier to talk about it now
than
it was then. But I also appreciate how important it is to talk about it so that people who are going through anything similar know that... It's not just them. And even now, Blighty, I'll be honest with you, I'm still not anywhere near as ambitious as some of my peers. You know, I'd much rather just sit in front of the TV with a whiskey in my hand, put my feet up. But I know that there's work that has to be done. I've got to do admin. I've got to do my expenses. I've got to make sure that I'm doing stuff on my socials to make sure that I'm not forgotten about. All of that shit, I'd rather not do that. I'd rather just stand in front of a room of people and make them laugh.
Yeah.
But it's not as easy as that. I've got to keep doing a bit of the work myself.
Well, listen, I get the impression that you are stronger. I get the impression that... You learn a lot about yourself. I think you're a great guy. And I wish you well going forward.
Thank you.
I just want to touch on charities.
Yes.
This is a property podcast, effectively, but we like the diversification and also love having lovely people, and you are one of them.
Thank you.
I know you do some stuff for charities. Do you just want to give us a little insight into that?
Yeah, so... The one my name is most attached to is a charity called First Touch, which is based at St. George's Hospital. And they are a charity that helps parents and the premature baby unit at the hospital. And they got in touch with me soon after my cousin had her twins prematurely. She suffered an episode of preeclampsia. And it was only because of the expert, calm and speedy work of the team at St. George's that Nana and Ohima are still with us today. And so that charity is one that I always mention. And if I do something like a game show where my winnings go to a charity, they get it first. Another charity that's quite important to me is the Black Unity Bike Ride,
yep.
which looks to champion the black community coming together through sport, primarily cycling. And every year they have a cycle ride from Leighton in East London down to varying locations in South London. We've had Brixton, Brockwell Park. And it's just a celebration of cycling as a sport and the black community in all of our layers, facets, shades, volumes. And twice now, Rwanda earlier this year and Ghana last year, the CEO of the charity, Tokumbo, has arranged charity rides where they ride something like 500 kilometres across those countries.
Which in old money for me is about just over 300 odd miles.
Yeah, right. And I've wanted to do both, but the timing hasn't been right yet. And, you know, you're trying to teach our kids that charities are important because not everybody is born... there isn't a level playing field. That's it, ultimately. Mm. There isn't a level playing field, whether it's socioeconomic, whether it's down to health and your physicality. And so, you know, charities are important to address that.
And it's interesting you say that. I mean, when we started this podcast, I looked into charities. The great British public, I'm told, raised 12 billion.
Yeah, I think I've got no other country to compare it to. But there is something about how Brits come together when charity calls.
It's just unbelievable.
When
you start looking at those figures, as we've recorded in this podcast, we're just on the verge a few weeks' time from an election. The country is in a recession. We have a housing crisis. Yet the construction industry and the house building industry come together. And I went to a do the other night and I just wrote down on a piece of paper what I thought they would raise.
Yeah.
It got smashed to smithereens. Yeah. I mean, you know, we have people being made redundant. We have terrible times. Yet people are so generous. And I don't know how they do it. And I'm glad that you've mentioned a couple of charities there. It's really important that we do that. It's really important that we keep talking about it, talking to kids. It doesn't matter where your socioeconomics are from.
No, I agree.
And you doing that is fantastic. When we started this podcast, I said that I didn't know you well. We were introduced by a group of people that we know. I mentioned a couple of the guys' names. There's others. You are what they told me you are.
Now I'm worried.
Yeah, you are just a lovely fella.
Thank you very much.
And it's been an absolute pleasure. When we sat down, I said, you know what? I know you've done this many more times than I've ever been close to doing something like this. You've done it many times. I said it goes quickly.
Yeah.
And it really has, time has flown.
Oh, we're done?
We're nearly done.
Oh, wow.
We're nearly done.
Oh, yeah, so we are. Wow.
Now, that's when you say it's your alluring company, Blighty.
That's it. Listen, time flies
when you're having fun.
So,
mate, I've really enjoyed having you on.
So have I.
And I know that we're going to be buddies.
Yeah.
And I can see a few headaches coming from me. And I'll be having the headache and you'll be telling me some sort of technical thing about it.
Oh, no, no.
You've tested it in the lab and you've seen this.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
Well, they are great sponsors of a golf tournament. Again, they give a lot to charity.
Yeah.
But I look forward to meeting up again with you in due course.
Likewise.
Stay safe. Take care.
I will do.
And
you too,
keep smiling. Keep making people laugh because it's the best thing you can have in the world.
Yeah.
Viewers, listeners, it's gone quick, too quick. another end comes to Blighty Talks Bricks. Otis, make your own judgment. I think he's an amazing guy. Stay safe, look after yourselves. See you soon.